entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
You may be owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Looking for car shows? Then look no further than flacarshows.com. On your computer or on your mobile device, flacarshows.com is a comprehensive list of automotive events, plus videos and news articles. Whether you're looking for car shows, cruise-ins, meetups, automotive festivals, cars and coffees, or anything else relating to an internal combustion engine, then this is a site for you. Check it out online or on your phone at flacarshows.com.
A cheap car, very cheap car.
Well, you've come to the right place, amigo. In fact, if you can find cars like these any cheaper, they're probably stolen.
My name's Bert Munro from New Zealand. Nice to meet you.
I'm Fernando from El Salvador. Nice to meet you, Mr. Munro.
You can call me Bert.
Okay, Mr. Bert.
Yeah.
So, how much were you looking to spend here, Mr. Bert? Oh,
not a lot, Fernando. I haven't got much left after the cab ride I took yesterday.
You want $3.99 for this? Sounds a bit sick.
Well, what would you offer me?
Listen, I'll give you $200 if you do me a favor. Throw in the use of your workshop and some of that junk I see lying around. So I've got to knock up a trailer to drag my bike over to Bonneville.
That's not a favor. $325 is a favor.
No, $225.
You're a tough customer, Mr. Bird. Yeah. But I like you. I'm going to give it to you for $250. You can use the workshop, but only at night, and keep the noise.
All right, what about tonight?
Yeah, tonight's okay.
All right, let's stop the car. Let's get this thing running properly.
Yeah, that sounds better. Let me drive.
Okay, come on.
Yeah, she's singing like a bird now.
Set the Wayback Machine.
Yes, sir, Mr. Peabody.
Hi, this is Bob Barsha with Speed. You're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Okay, listeners, welcome. You're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and I'm your show host, Robert. Run your computers and Google TANTalk1340.com, and you can see us live here in the studios in downtown Clearwater. Don't forget to check out our website, GulfstreamMotorsports.com, where you can find out all about us. And if you miss any of our past shows, don't forget to check out NostalgicRadioandCars.com. Good evening, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Back in the driver's seat, aren't you?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Well, we got an interesting show tonight. I'm going to be talking a little bit about stuff. Car stuff, okay, and what precipitated this is because every once in a while I have these little adventures, if you will, and or these scenarios. So obviously, one of the things that I want to kind of start with is the diminished value and insurance and how important that is, and I'm not sure exactly what we need to do, whether we need to get some lobbyists in our favor. There's a few guys out there, politicians, that I think are kind of quasi-okay. But the law in Georgia is, or under the statute, reads that they will fix your vehicle, and property damage law, and then they will also pay you for the loss of value of your vehicle. Third party, which means if you hit them, or if you're hit, okay, you can file a claim against the at-fault insured. Now, if you've ever sat there and taken the time to read your insurance policy, and this is really, really, really boring, I know, but it's something that comes up here quite frequently. I get a fair amount of calls a month to keep me really, really, really busy, but it doesn't because, unfortunately, in Florida, okay, the property damage minimum, the property damage requirement, the minimum requirement is $10,000 on property damage and $10,000 on personal bodily injury. In Georgia, as an example, it is $25,000 and $50,000. So $25,000 on property damage, $50,000 bodily. There's a lot of people out there, and I don't really care if I step on your toes or not. There's a lot of people out there that should not be driving a vehicle because they can't afford to drive a vehicle, and they shouldn't be driving for multiple reasons, whatever. But if you can't afford adequate insurance, and unfortunately we live in a real litigious society these days, and that is a concern, okay? But it's not so much about litigation or legalities as it is the whole idea behind insurance is to typically you have insurance to make you whole again, okay? So whether you have homeowners insurance and your house gets damaged during a storm, you're not asking for a lottery ticket. You're simply asking to be made whole again, which means fix my house the way it was prior to the damage, okay? If the house was built 40 years ago, you have to repair the house because a tree landed on it, and I can tell you this from experience, okay? And if the new codes, if the repairs have to be done up to the standards of the current existing codes. So 40 years ago, the codes were, I'm not going to say they were lax, but they were adequate for the time based on circumstances. Well, today we know we've had a lot more damage. We had a lot more storms, you know, wind damage. So the experience tells us that we need to have additional coverage, additional addendums, additional riders, whatever, you know, in an insurance policy to cover for the loss of property damage. And then on the building side, for example, you know, you've got building codes. So we build the buildings and the houses and the homes and the structures stronger, safer. So that means that when your house is damaged during a storm and it was 40 years old, when they go to repair it, they have to repair it up to certain standards. Now, the problem is there could be a provision in your insurance company in your insurance policy that doesn't provide for that. Now, I'm not an insurance salesman, okay? I'll be the first one to tell you. And I'm not a lawyer, okay? And they do have shows on this network to talk about. You know, there's one that gets on here that's a bunch of, you know, ambulance chasers that get on here earlier, or personal injury lawyers, I should say. And then you've got some people talking about insurance and some of that other stuff. But you really need to read your policy. But I'm going to focus on diminished value. And I'm also going to focus on total loss. And the reason I'm going to talk about that a little bit is because I get a fair amount of calls where the people are damaged or they're involved in an accident, and the at-fault driver has inadequate insurance. They have the bare minimum. So on an average, if I'm doing a 2021, 2022, 2023 car, even a 2015 for that matter, and you hit that guy in the side, and it's a Ford truck, and you cream the side of the cab and take out two doors, you're probably close to $10,000, $12,000, $13,000 worth of damage, okay? Particularly, and then if you got in the cab, behind the cab, and you got in the truck bed. Now you got to replace the side. This is an aluminum-bodied truck, okay? It requires a professional that is trained within, according to the proper procedures that is required by the manufacturer. So Ford says you have to be certified to do aluminum repair, which means either your aluminum welding, TIG welding, big welding, whatever it might be, popping rivets in there, whatever you're doing, okay? But you're disassembling the car and you're reassembling the car, and it's aluminum. It's not like metal where you can just basically spot weld and you're done. There's a little bit more to it with aluminum. Obviously, we know about this because when you deal with some of these European exotics, Ferraris, Jaguars, and I did a Jaguar one time, and it was an XK8, but one of those $100,000 plus jobbies, okay? And he got sideswiped just in the wheel well, just a dent. It looked like somebody kicked it. The problem is it has an aluminum exterior, and the panels are not welded together. They're bonded, okay? So in order to make the repair to meet the standards required by the manufacturer to maintain the warranty, the whole quarter panel had to be cut off the car, and a new quarter panel had to be installed. Now, this would ordinarily be a $1,000 dent on any other ordinary car out of the, you know, 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s even, okay? But because this had an aluminum exterior and it was bonded to a HSS high-strength steel frame member or inner structure there around the wheel well, it had to be bonded. You couldn't straighten the quarter panel, in other words. Okay. I thought it was ridiculous, but here you cut up practically a brand new car to put up a whole quarter panel, I might add. And I saw the car at the body shop. I won't mention the body shop, but they were qualified. And I just felt for the owner of the vehicle. He had just bought the car, had the car 7 days. And so now his car's got to be cut up. Now, I will say that the repair is okay, but it is not, when a car has been crashed and fixed, we're not restoring the car. We're fixing the car. Get that through everybody's head. We're fixing it. So we're making it look good again. It is not the way the car rolled off the assembly line. By comparison, and I'm going to get into the diminished value thing in a second. A friend of mine has a Jaguar E-Type. I'm very familiar with Jag E-Types, having owned one or two or one before and been around them for a while. The front inner structure on a Jaguar, the front suspension member or front inner structure, is carbon, is chromoly. Okay. They used to be in race cars. A lot of your roll cages are chromoly. It's very, very lightweight and high strength. But over time, so I'm told, I'm not a metallurgist or anything like that, but over time, and the same thing with racing cars that have aluminum tubs and chromoly tubs and chassis, and they're skinned in aluminum, let's say, for example, and pop rivet together, they become brittle, okay, over time. And magnesium wheels is another one. Magnesium wheels look great. They're lightweight. But over time, they get brittle. And they're a potential risk. So you think about this. You're driving a car down the road, and all of a sudden, it literally just over time, just becomes fatigued. And then, poof. Could happen. Or, you know, they're painted on the outside, but they're not painted on the inside. So basically, rust takes place on the inside. You can't see it until it's too late, and that's when it cracks and bends and falls apart. In the event of an accident, it's going to fold up like a pretzel. The nice thing about a Jag is that they're back from the firewall back, it's a tub, unibody, kind of like a Camaro, basically. And the front end structure bolts on it. Okay, so where I'm going with all this is, if you take your car down to my good friends at Predator Motorsports, and I'm a big shout out to Larry and those guys, Larry's going to totally disassemble, or Paul Sakuris over in Tampa, or in Lakeland, does amazing restorations on Healy's and Jags and cars like that. In fact, he did a fantastic job on a 356 here not too long ago. But these guys are experienced guys. They set a car up on a jig. It's completely disassembled, 100% disassembled, 100% reassembled. Okay, you got thousands of hours in these cars. And those are restored cars. So they're taking the time and making the effort to make this car as good as it was when it rolled off the assembly line with either replacement parts and panels. And they're so seasoned, so experienced, that they can put these cars together so they look like they're brand new. By comparison, but they're getting paid, you know, $100, $150, $200 an hour. Now, you do the math on this, okay? So you got a car that's worth $100,000. And you're putting 2,000 hours, and I'm just going to pick a conservative number because I know some cars take 2,000 hours. Some cars, like a Mercedes 300 SL Roadster, might take 4,000 hours. If you're talking about an old vintage Delahaye, Delage, Duesenberg, you might be in the 4,000 or 5,000 hours. I'll do the math. $100 an hour, $150 an hour, $200. You're going to get into a $500,000, $1 million restoration. That's not uncommon for those kind of cars. Granted, they bring that kind of money, but let's talk about the Jaguar, for example. So it's going to cost you $200,000 to restore a $100,000 Jaguar. Now, we're talking an E-Type Roadster now. A really, really, really nice one might bring $200,000, you know, but that's another story. Where we're going here is we're talking about production cars, okay? So when these production cars get fixed, they're not the same car, okay? 75% of the cars that I do, they're hitting the rear. When you have a full size person sitting in a driver's seat and you lunge forward, you're strapped in, the airbags come off, you lunge forward and then you come back as a result of the impact. If you really want to see what I'm talking about, visualize this, go to any YouTube channel where they show crash tests, okay, and watch the slow motion, how your car compresses and then expands and then it kind of settles, okay, and watch the crash test dummies in there. Okay, what happens to them? Okay, and they're pretty close to the same weight as a human, you know, whether they're full size, oversized, or a child. Okay, they've got all kinds of dummies, test dummies. And so you want to take this into consideration, because very often, and I do not get into this because this is a repair dimension, right? But almost every guy at a body shop, particularly the body shop managers, and that's got to be your best friend when your car's crashed and fixed, because you're going to have issues. There's wiring harnesses in the cars. If you know about the wiring harnesses, and then there's electronics, and there's brain boxes and computers, there's all kinds of gizmo. Okay, when the car crashes and expands, if you've ever worked on the car, you know that they have just enough wire to plug it into wherever it's going to go. So if a car expands, compresses, and then expands, and then comes back, very often what happens is those plugs actually pull apart. A pin could come apart, and suddenly your car's not functioning the way it did before. The impact, when you're sitting in the seat and you lunge forward and you go back, it's easy to believe, and I'm telling you this, that better than 50% of the time, the seat tracks are messed up, okay? Because I hear this all the time. Well, so I do not get into repair diminished values. My job is to strictly look at the vehicle. What's the vehicle worth 1 minute before the accident, and what is it worth after the accident? Okay, so where I'm going back to Georgia is, in Georgia, they have a first party as well as a third party diminished value statute on the books. So that means that if you wad your car up yourself, or the person that ran into you is inadequately insured, you can still collect against your insurance company for the lost value of your vehicle. Okay, so in Georgia, they try to, some hokey lawyer came up and some insurance guy got together. They got this hokey thing called Rule 17C, and in short, what it does basically is they use a mileage estimator in there, which, duh, you know, every used car guy knows about mileage. You know, if it's, you know, 10,000 to 15,000 miles a year, maybe 17,000, depending on where you're at, is the average. You know, if you got over that, then you know you got your value goes down a little bit. Duh. Okay, but the condition of the car and the fact that the car gets crashed, it's not worth what it was before the accident, and all you are asking for is to be indemnified. Indemnified, if you look it up, the legal term means made whole again. You're not asking for a lottery ticket. You just want to be made whole again. So if you crash your car yourself, okay, your insurance company in Georgia will take care of that. The Rule 17C, like I started to say about the mileage estimator, they started out with this 10% of the value of the estimate. So if you had $5,000 worth of damage in terms of the repair order, you were getting $500. If you had $10,000, you were getting $1,000. Well, they went to court a few times, and I will say that the worst insurance company, I don't mind saying it, is State Farm. Okay, the State Farm basically comes out and says, you know, we don't care, because of 100 out of 100 people, 90 people, that's 90%, will not fight us. 10% will fight us. If you take the average, if we go to court, knowing that we're full well we're going to lose in court on a diminished value claim, it's worth it to us because we're still on the plus side, because the other 90% didn't do anything about it. Well, here's what we have to do, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, car guys. We have to make sure that the 90% files the claims as well, and 10% sit on their butt and do nothing. So where I'm going with this is, in Florida, it recognizes that under the Florida law of property damage, okay, the statute, it says, this is the law, it says that the insurance company is basically obligated to repair your vehicle to the precondition that it was before, provide you with a rental car equivalent to what you are driving now, and to compensate you or indemnify you for the lost value of your vehicle, and also the loss of vehicle, the loss of the use of the vehicle, if you really want to pursue it. Now, you have to read between the lines, but that's kind of the way the law is states in Florida. Now, the insurance companies will come right out and they'll say, and this is where I have an issue. So the average, it seems like a lot of these accidents that people are having lately, they're having accidents with the at-fault driver being only with $10,000 worth of property damage. So the average repair bill that I see lately on these later model vehicles, popped in the rear, hitting the side, knocked with the front end knocked off, it makes no difference. $15,000, $16,000, $17,000, $18,000. Okay, so that $10,000 by the at fault insured is going to go. The insurance company is going to go, here, here's your $10,000. Have a nice day. Now you have to pay for the difference. So what happens is you either have to have uninsured motorist. Well, uninsured if they don't have any underinsured motorists, okay, which means underinsured, and your insurance company will pick up the difference, and then your insurance company will subrogate against that insurance company or that individual, okay, for the difference for what they had to lay out. The problem is that if your insurance company has to put out money, guess what? You lose your deductible. So whether you got $250, $500, $1,000, $2,000 deductible, that comes out of your pocket. Okay, and then the other thing is if you don't have underinsured motorists, and or a comprehensive collision policy, guess what? It's still coming out of your pocket. So it's really, you know, and in the old days, if you had a really good insurance agent like I used to have, he had handled everything. Okay, so all I did is call the cops, come out, there was an accident, call 911, and then the second call was to your insurance company. And basically, you know, you got picked up by a cab, your relatives, a friend, and you were taken home. The next day, the ball was rolling, and you were basically in a rental car until your car was fixed. And hopefully there was no lawsuit, no injuries, or nothing major wrong. So today, these insurance companies hire an agent, and that's all he does. And he says, well, we have to turn the claim over to a claims adjuster. Well, the claims adjuster is just as inexperienced as the sales agent, and neither of them know squat. Now, here, let me go rag on State Farm for a little bit, okay? State Farm will send you three letters. The first letter that you'll get if you file a diminished value claim, provided you have one of my comprehensive, detailed diminished value reports, okay, which I charge $600 for, and they're fairly detailed, as some lawyers call it, they're court ready, okay? So that's huge. Anyway, so the first letter you get from the insurance company when you submit the diminished value claim, it's, oh, wow, you know what? Your car looks just as good as it did the day it rolled off the showroom floor. Have a nice day. And you're going to go, nah, that's unacceptable. I hired a professional appraiser who's a licensed independent car dealer who's got 35 years in experience in the salvage yard business. And he says, according to his report, that the loss value of my vehicle is X number of dollars based on the pre-crash value. So they're going to say, oh, geez, okay, well, I'll tell you what. Here's $500 for your troubles. Have a nice day. All right? Then the best one from State Farm is, well, you know, we're State Farm. We're the biggest insurance company in the United States. We're a conglomerate. We're a multinational company. We're a monopoly. They don't say that, but they are. And they say, you know what? State Farm doesn't recognize diminished value. There's no such thing as diminished value. Your car's not diminished. Your car looks fine. Go have a nice day. That is the problem, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so and here's what I have to advise my clients. And I just got one yesterday and another one today. Same scenario. People don't have adequate insurance, and the repair bills are over $11,000. The cars are hurt, and they're fixed, and there's lost value. Who's going to pay for that? So if you look at your insurance policy, if you do have State Farm, for example, State Farm didn't used to, but now recently, not always, but every once in a while, you'll see it in a policy where they say, we don't pay for the loss value of your vehicle. We don't pay for a rental car. We don't pay. I mean, there's so many exclusions in there. You really, really, really have to look at your insurance policy. You really have to go out there and say, hey, insurance guy, I need to get the best insurance that I can, most comprehensive insurance, to protect myself from these crazies out on the streets. So I need a minimum of $500,000 worth of liability. I need a million, and I'm throwing some numbers out there, okay? If you can afford $1 million or $2 million, that's fine. The more you got, the more they try to sue you for it. That's how that works. But nonetheless, let's just say, and if you don't have the adequate insurance, then what happens is they come after you personally. So you better have your assets protected. Assets protected. And one more time. Anyway, so what happens is, and keep in mind, lawyers are ruthless. They are self-serving. I'll just say serpents. How about that? I had other words in my mind, but that's what they are. So And I don't mind telling them to their face, because I have no respect for lawyers, only because I see what I see out there all the time. I actually had, and I'm jumping around a little bit, I had a lawyer call me from South Florida one time. And he said, hey, I hear you do diminished values. I said, yeah. He says, well, we're always looking to work with appraisers that do diminished value reports, and we'd like to, you know, maybe forge a relationship with you. I said, oh, yeah, really? He says, yeah. As a matter of fact, I said, so how does your procedure work? He says, well, we, you know, we basically go to court, blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, we lean on the insurance companies. Okay. I said, what's your threshold? Threshold meaning, what is the minimum amount of money that you will pursue a diminished value on? He tells me $3,100. Now, think about this for a second. For all you people out there that are not aware of it, personal injury lawyers, ambulance chasers, tire buyers, whatever you want to call them, serpents, okay, there is no good description. Because I have issues with them, okay? Because all they care about is the money. They drag the system out. They care about the money. They don't care about anything else, all right? So if a personal injury lawyer says, look, you know, you got a claim, you know, right away they throw out some crazy number to get you in sucked in, if they're going to take the case, if they think they can do something, because it's all about the money. If there's no money in it, they're not taking the case. Say, well, you know, you might want to go see this guy. We're pretty busy right now. I've seen them all, okay? So anyway, so this $3,100 lawyer, for lack of a better word, and I said to him, I said, wait a minute, let me explain, how do you, I know what my fee is, okay, and I know what you typically pay people, so what is your fee? You don't actually charge these people 33 1/3% plus expenses, do you? Because if that's the case, 33 1/3 out of, you know, if you take the 3,100 less my six, let's just say five, okay, now you're $2,500, okay, and then he takes a third of that plus expenses, this guy's going to have less than $1,000 for his diminished value. What is the incentive there? You know, there's no motivation for him to say, well, you know what, I'm out my money. I mean, he's basically SOL. So that's a joke. So if you call a lawyer and you talk to him and say, hey, look, I got a diminished value claim, they're not going to take it. Why? There's no money in it. Now, I did do I think I mentioned this before, a brand new 2024 Corvette Z06 2L package, okay? The guy had a window sticker on the car of 162, and then he got hammered another $20,000 premium because he had to have the car, and the dealership took advantage of it to put a markup on it. So this guy was out 180. He had the car, picked the car up on a Thursday, went out, drove it around a little bit. On Friday, he picked his wife up, then went out to dinner. On the way back, he got tapped in the rear. He hit, basically, okay? 129 miles on a $180,000 car. Now, a Corvette Z06 is not your average car. It's not a Ford F-150, okay? So I have kind of like a formula procedure that I use to come out with my valuations. But on a Corvette, on a Classic, on a Ferrari, on something unusual, particularly when the owner of the vehicle sits there and says to me, I don't want that car anymore. It's blemished, it's damaged, it's stigmatized, whatever you want to call it. It is not the car that I bought. I want nothing to do with it. And I said, fine. So you can't use the normal formula because it's a collector's car. It's a specialty car. So now, the best way to get a value on that car is to put the car out for bid. What is this car worth in its current damaged condition? What's the car worth fixed? Well, believe it or not, the valuation came out to $80,000, okay, because the offers that I were getting were under 100. So that's an example. Now, everybody's mad at me, but I have hard money buyers at anywhere between $80,000 and $100,000 on this car. And I said, if you don't think I'm telling you the truth, if you doubt my report, I defy you to find somebody to pay you more. It's a damaged Corvette, period. Yeah, it's a vet, but it's a damaged Corvette. Well, it's a vet. It's a Z06. I know. It's a damaged Z06. Okay? Doesn't matter. Okay? So this is where we're going with this. You've got, I even give examples when I give up my reports. You've got two identical vehicles. One Z06 has never been crashed, and you got another Z06 that's been crashed. And there's $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in difference. And the guy goes, man, why, this is a bargain. Why is it so cheap? Well, I was involved in an accident. Ooh, an accident. And subconsciously in the back of your mind, you're thinking, wait a minute. What could be wrong? What could possibly be wrong with this car? I mean, I'm going to lay out some serious money here for a used car. you know, a Corvette, and never mind, it could be an F-150. It could be a 2021, 22 F-1. You're still going to pay $40,000, $50,000 for a real nice one with all the goodies on it, right? A Lariat or something like that, or even a King Ranch or a Platinum for that matter. And, you know, and if it's a 4X4 package, you know, something like that, you're going to pay a premium for it. Why are we talking about Fords? Because we're Ford people. Okay, just to clarify that. Anyway, but I am talking about a Corvette. So the bottom line, it doesn't matter. I worked at Reeves Import Motor Cars back when they were Reeves Import Motor Cars. All right. And I was I sold BMWs and Porsches, occasionally an Audi, and occasionally a Volkswagen. And I think I may have even sold a Subaru once. Big shout out to Malcolm Brooklyn for that matter. At any rate, so we would get these brand new BMWs in. They would come in on a transporter. And this is all that happened to them. That every once in a while, a transporter, a chain would slip, just a chain, and it would nick the car. As a result of that, the car had to be repainted. We had to, as a licensed independent, a licensed franchise dealer, had to disclose why there was paintwork on the car. Every one of those cars that had some paintwork, a slight damage, which was paid for by the insurance of the carrier, we had to put an orange dot on the windshield. And I recall walking through the BMW lot, the Porsche lot, Audi lot, didn't make any difference which lot I was on, and I'd have two identical cars, two 530 BMWs, two Audi A6s, S-types, or two 911s. Made no difference. And there was a dot on one and none on the other one. And there was about a $5,000 to $10,000 difference in price. And they would get asked why. And I said, well, because somewhere down the line, it got scratched, nicked, painted, or whatever. These cars were only nicked and painted. And people were going, you know what, if I'm financing a $50,000 car, I'll just go ahead and pay the extra $50, $75 a month in monthly payments, and I'll get a brand new car. That's the mindset. That's it in a nutshell. Okay? So the where I'm going with this whole story, okay, is the fact that in Florida, it's unclear. Now, you'll just like, and you're going to talk to me, you might talk to 10 other guys that do what I do, okay? But it's all about the interpretation. It's kind of like in my disclaimer in every one of my appraisals, my valuations, is it is the opinion of the appraiser. Okay, it's my opinion, my professional opinion. And by the way, since I've been an expert witness in court, okay, an expert witness in court is the only person in a courtroom that can render an opinion. Everybody else has to have facts. So then you get two experts in there, and they're on opposing sides, and it's his opinion versus my opinion. So whoever's opinion is more compelling, okay, generally influences the outcome of the case. Fair statement? Fair statement. So I try to have a couple lawyer friends of mine read the law. The law is unclear because it doesn't say that there's no first party claims. It just says law covers you for the loss. The insurance company is required to make you whole again. Totally in depth. Well, and what insurance company? So then what happens is it goes to case. Now we have case law. Well, here's the deal. You have a judge in Miami that might rule one way. You have a judge in Pinellas County that rules another way. You have a judge in Tallahassee that rules another way. A judge in Pensacola that rules another way. Orlando, and so on. So now you got three case laws in this favor and two case laws in that favor. Okay, so you the only way to know for sure, and this is what I tell people, particularly when you're dealing with State Farm, is take them to small claims court. End of story. Okay, you have the right to seek all legal remedies available to you. And on top of that, don't forget there's this other agency which is also bought and paid for by the insurance companies, and it's called the Insurance Commission. Okay, now I'm ragging on everybody up there because unfortunately I'm suspect of everybody because I see the outcomes. And when I see things not in favor of the consumer, it's a little irritating. You know, because my job is to help you out and to write these reports so that you can get as much money as you possibly can to make you whole again. In other words, maybe I should rephrase that. My job is to make sure that you get the amount of money that compensates you for the lost value of the vehicle, of the actual lost vehicle of the vehicle. Okay. Oh, there's that word again, ACV, actual cash value. That's another one. Actual cash value is what I put on the table. So if I say the value is one thing, The actual cash value is after the fact. I paid you $5,000. I paid you $6,000. That's the actual cash value. If I sit there and say, well, we're going to offer you $6,000, that's the actual cash value. No, it's not, because I didn't accept it. So it's not the actual cash value. It's your offer. They need to get that straight. I clarify that as well in my reports. So we go round and around and around and around and around on this kind of stuff. It's really, really, really quite frustrating, because I'm in it with my clients till the very end, until we have to go to court, and then that's becomes another matter, and then that's extra. But, you know, and the whole time I help you out with the letters, and I help you out with the correspondence, because the average person out there doesn't really know. And here's the other thing. There are these companies, out-of-state companies, that advertise, we do diminished value, we do this, we do that. Well, they're fly-by-nights. Yeah, they're bargain people, but they don't even physically look at the vehicle. Okay, they just, nah, I just pull a number off the, I just pull the numbers out of my hiney. If you have somebody that physically inspects the vehicle, and I will tell you that every time I've been in court, the attorney goes, Mr. Robert, have you physically inspect, or the judge, Mr. Robert, did you physically inspect the vehicle? Yes, sir, I did. And then he goes to the other side. Did you guys physically inspect the vehicle? Well, the car was in Sarasota. We didn't really have anybody that could drive down there. Oh, you did? No. Oh, all right. So then Mr. Mulkey went and made an extra effort to go out there and look at the car and do this and do that, and then he wrote a compelling report. Kind of seals their fate. Okay, so that's how you win. You win because you have professional people that know most of the angles, and it's a learning process. I will tell you that. I learn stuff all the time, okay? And I fight about this stuff all the time. Now, in a total loss situation, you basically exercise what they call the appraisal clause. You give me the authority to act on your behalf. And a diminished value, the only thing I can do is write a report, and I can just, you know, help you out with some of the correspondence and stuff like that. And then I kind of keep it as a kind of a neutral area. I'm just an appraiser, and here's my opinion. Here's what I think you could, you know, kind of give you a little advice and so on. Hey, Bobby, you want to fire up some, since it's Paul McCartney's birthday.
Yeah.
We're going to play a little, it's kind of like This Day in History.
Yeah, there's actually.
Let's play.
Quite a bit of stuff going on.
Yeah, and then I'll come back and maybe I'll rant and rave some more about diminishing value and all the other kind of stuff since I'm on a rant. Mm. I should have said I have open phone lines, but you could call in if you have a question, but not yet. Okay. Anyway, hey, you're tuning into Nostalgic Radio and Cars. Here's a little Paul McCartney, and happy birthday to Paul McCartney today. 82 years old for a young Beatle. Okay, we're back, and I don't know, is the rant over? Anyway, so...
there's other exciting stuff today. Monterey Pop Festival closed on this very day in history.
Did we? And was this the day that Jimi Hendrix set his guitar on fire?
Yes, it was. Yes, I'm looking at that right now. But yes, it was June 16th through the 18th was the length of the festival.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that album, Jimmy Plays Monterey, was released, I want to say, a year after... Oh, no, no. That was released in this in 1986 at the same time.
Gotcha.
But it was still on this day. And what else we got exciting today?
Well, essentially,
we got Blake Shelton's birthday.
Blake Shelton's birthday is today. Yeah, he's 42. 40-something, right?
48.
Yeah, and he's a country singer. Anyway, we got somebody on the phone right now. I'm not sure who that is right now. But anyway, so again, what you need to do is you need to look at your policy. You need to, if you have a lawyer buddy, have him look at the law, because the thing is that the insurance companies have for years and years and years, and all the years I was in the wrecking yard business, have gotten away with not paying for the loss value of your vehicle.
Well, hold that thought here. Charlie does have a good story for today.
Who does? Who's this?
Charlie?
Hey, Rob, what's going on? How you been?
How you doing?
Well, you guys know I've been shooting for Fox and CBS. This is my 26th season.
Yeah.
And I got to work a bunch of Super Bowls. Anyway, I was fortunate enough to work with McCartney, Paul McCartney, that is, today's his birthday, as you know, 82. I just tuned in. I was busy doing stuff. I got to work with him at the Super Bowl up in Jacksonville. Really cool. Down to earth. I'm like, holy crap. Yeah, it was cool. It was a Thursday night. It was about 9 o'clock. We had to do three or four of the rehearsal songs. There was a bunch of people there. He had a show. They wanted some different camera moves, but he was really cool. I just walked up to him and said, hey, Paul, thanks for great music. It was real quick, but still got to meet him. And then 10 years prior to that, when I was living in Los Angeles with my brother in Studio City, I ran into Ringo in a health food store called Ruan's, which was next to CBS. I was just walking through the aisle. True story, honest to God. I was walking through the aisle, and I see, is Barbara or Catherine Bach? Who's he married to?
Catherine. Barbara Bach.
I always say that, too. Yeah,
and Catherine is the one from Dukes of Hazzard.
Daisy Duke. Yeah, yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, I still got a pair of her shorts. That's another story.
Okay.
I'll bring them in one night.
All right,
we'll size them up.
Okay.
Anyway, I said, hey, can I say hello? She's like, yeah. So I'm hearing Ringo say to the guy behind the counter, don't forget to put the ginseng in it. He was telling the kid behind the counter he's making a smoothie to put ginseng in his shake. True story. So I walked up to him. He had his hands folded. I said, hey, Ringo, nice to meet you, blah, blah, blah. When are you going to be back in Florida? Oh, we just got back from there, because he was touring with the All-Star group, Frampton and everybody else. Yeah. But really cool, down to earth. And then, of course, I didn't have my camera with me because, no cell phone that time. So I followed him out, and they took off in a 7 Series BMW, and he was messing with the button that just controls the locks, and that was it. I'm like, holy crap, that was freaking Ringo. it was really cool. True story, honest to God.
All right. So,
yeah, definitely. I thought I'd give you guys a call. Hey, Al's getting a little bit better, too. I got to go give him a visit. He called the other day.
Yeah, why don't you go say hi to him?
I will. He's always got some good stories.
All right.
We'll see you, man. Have a great night, man. What show number is this?
717, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
How about that?
717.
Right. 717. That's a good number. All right.
Have a good night. Take care, pal.
You're good. Thanks for calling in. Bye-bye. All right. So let me talk a little bit about, jump over to classic cars. Okay, so today we went to go look at a sports car. Okay. Now, every once in a while I look on this little thing called, the marketplace and the internet, web, whatever. And every once in a while, there's always a deal out there. There's as my good friend Danny Newcomb from Golden Classics would call it, he says, Robert, every auction, every day, somewhere, there's a ringer. Now, a ringer has multiple meanings, but a ringer in our eyes, car guy's eyes, is a deal. Okay, so today we went and looked at the car. Now they were advertising this car for X number of dollars. I'll just say 10 grand, for example. And so it's an old British sports car. Now, what was interesting is I was looking this car up, and I thought, okay, well, the market for a really, 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 really nice one is about $30,000, $35,000. I've seen him bring a little bit more, but let's just say $30,000 to $35,000. So $25,000 to $35,000 is a range for a really nice driver quality car that you could actually drive to a car show. Now, the reason I'm not telling you guys what it is because I don't want you guys running out there and buying it. So that's all I'm going to say. But I gave away the hint. I gave the hint away. Okay, it was on whatever. Anyway, so I had just looked at one of these very same cars. One of these Prince of Darkness jobbies in Road Atlanta, when I was up at Road Atlanta about 6 weeks ago, so 2 months ago, I was up there for the vintage races. So I drove up to this other little town in a little remote area and someplace in Georgia and on the U.S. soil. And there was another one of these things. Now, this particular car did not have wire wheels. This car had steel wheels, but it was a little bit better condition. Now, the thing that you have to look for on these cars is you have to look for the condition is everything, okay? Now, here's a car that has a maximum value right now, current market maximum value of about, let's say, $35,000, okay? So if you were listening to my early on, if a repair shop, I'm not talking a body shop. Body shops are like $56, $60 an hour. But a guy that does restoration basically is going to charge $80 to $100 an hour if he's a local guy. Unless he's, you know, Rob Myers or somebody like that, or if he's Russell up there in New England, or if he's Wayne Carini, or if he's someplace out, you know, Chip Foose or something like that, they're going to get hundreds of dollars an hour to do a restoration on the car. Now, if you figure the average car, I was told at one point in time years ago that a Mustang takes 1,500 hours. So let's just say 1,500 to 2,000 hours. If you're charging $100, you're charging $200,000 to restore a Mustang that's worth 50, 60 grand, unless it's a Shelby or a Boss, okay? Doesn't make economic sense. And the same goes for these little British sports cars, or whether it's a Fiat, whether it's a Volkswagen, whether it's a thing, whether it's anything like that. If these cars do not have the value, then when you see these cars and you think they're a bargain, they're really not a bargain. What they are is an opportunity for you to get a little car that you can fix up, possibly mechanically, and drive it around and just, for lack of a better word, slick it as best you can, and, you know, buy some little bit of upholstery, redo it yourself if you can, because it's not that complicated. You know, upholstery is not, unless you're getting the leathers and stuff like that, but they make kits. So, like for a Mustang, you can buy seat covers. You know, they're a couple $100 for the front seats, and about the same for the back seats. And then you got door panels, and then you got kick panels, and then you got a carpeting. All that stuff you can do yourself. It's real simple. And there's this thing on the interweb called YouTube, and YouTube, I call it YouTube University. It's amazing the stuff that you learn because somebody else has already experimented with it and screwed around with it. I mean, I've actually got a YouTube channel. What's our YouTube channel, Bobby?
Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Nostalgic Radio and Cars. That's right. The video edition, right?
That you used to have a handle, but now you just put in Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Right. Now, every once in a while, I do some stuff out there. I want everybody to get your little computers out and go like, Nostalgic Radio and Cars, like, All Street Motorsports, like. So, anyway, check out my little YouTube channel. Now, this car today, I was going to do a YouTube video on it, but if I wind up with it, I made the gentleman an offer, okay? And I wasn't too far off. I actually found out that I was the second highest bid, and that shocked me. But at any rate, so somebody's thinking along the lines of me, moi. But at any rate, but when I looked at this car, okay, somebody had, they did a video on this car about 2 years ago, okay, when it was up for sale the first time. And they were running and driving, the car looked okay. Now, the car has some serious patina, but that's actually kind of cool because that gives the car a little bit of character. Now, you could, you know, the Earl Scheib's not around anymore. Facto Bake, I don't think, is around anymore, but I think there's a couple other places like Econo Bake, maybe, or whatever. So if you strip a car and you want to, you know, $500,000 to $600,000 paint jobs, some cheap cruddy paint just to make the car look one color and it's shiny a little bit, then that's not bad. We did a 240Z race car one time, and they did a pretty decent car on, a pretty decent little paint job on it, but we had to do all the detail work, and it actually came out really, really good. It was a very presentable car, but it was a race car, so it looked fine. And so it's not show quality, but, you know, just for a driver, and it's all about driving the car, having the fun, the experience, and putting a smile on your face. So if you've got the budget to buy a really, 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 really nice car, by all by all intents and purposes, buy the really, really, really nice car. But if you can't, and you tinker, and you like to tinker, and you're a little, you know, you like a little variety once in a while, there's a lot of really good bargains out there. Mustangs are the cheapest cars that you can possibly buy because the parts are all available. The next second best car that you can buy and all kinds of stuffs out there are MGBs. Okay, in my opinion, is the British version of a Ford Mustang, because they're unibody for one. They're very stout little cars. They're simple. They're not fast. A Mustang's really not fast. Okay. By comparison, a Camaro, a Firebird, a Challenger, a Cuda, you know, those are more expensive cars. Parts are extremely expensive on those. So you have to look at the whole economics when you're in there playing around with a car, when you're thinking about doing something. But anyway, so this car had some rust issues. You could tell it was damaged at one point in time. They fixed it. They dollied it out a little bit. Somebody put floorboards in it, and then they hacked them in there. And then the rockers have holes in them on the top, on the bottom, on the side. But actually, I jumped up and down, and the car really didn't bend like it's, you know, collapsed. Now, it did have a little rust in the rear frame rail. Not really good, you know, but it didn't look like it was a really big hole. But that's what I was telling you about earlier on the Jaguar. You could have the rust starts from the inside because it's not protected, it's not coated, it's not treated. This is why they dip these things and then they spray stuff on the inside of them so that they do last. But all this takes time. And I'll give you an example. The other day I was working on something real simple. I don't remember what it was, a latch assembly or something like that. I had that thing on and off probably, oh no, I was adjusting a set of bumpers. I had those bumpers on and off probably, oh, I don't know, 25 times. To get them lined up right and put the bumper guards on it, and then all I was doing is modifying them a little bit on this car so I could get a set of fog lights in there. I spent hours and hours and hours. Now, if I was one of those guys, a shop, and I had to charge you $100 an hour, and it took me 8 hours just to put one stinking lousy little bumper guard on, you know, to get it right, because it's not like it's right there, two bolts, and you just unbolt it and throw it. No, no, no. You got to sit there and jack with this thing a little bit. You got bolts behind you. You got to reach behind the fender. And you got to, you know, and you got to be contortionist to actually work on the vehicle. So, then you wonder why restoration costs so much. So you want to avoid a restoration, unless you got the rarest car on the planet and you got all the money in the world, then you restore a car. But most people will tell you your best bet is to go out and buy a done car with all the proper documentation. I cannot overemphasize documentation. That's extremely important, is to get documentation, the history of the car, how the car was done, how the car was fixed, what the car looked like before it was fixed, repaired, restored, whatever. Because that's important, because you don't want to get stuck with a pig in a poke. What's that thing about a pig on a lipstick or a lipstick on a pig, something like that?
Lipstick on a pig.
Lipstick on a pig.
Diamonds on doo-doo, whichever.
Yeah. So we polish poo-poos here all the time. I mean, that's what we're in the polish poo-poo business as far as cars. No. And you know what? Personally, I like project cars. Always have. I've always done okay with them. You know, I get some nice cars. I don't really get really, really, really nice cars. And I stay with, you know, affordable cars. I don't really want to get in this big money car. Because the more expensive the car, the more astute the buyer, usually, okay? And but again, you could have a guy that knows a lot about Mustang. I mean, I was over at this one guy's shop, and he bought a 68 Roadrunner, 383 automatic car, column shift car. He paid $6,500 for it. Now he's got another $7,000 or $8,000 in sheet metal on this thing. The whole car, the only thing that's original on the car is the front end of structure and the A-pillars. Everything else has got to be replaced on this car. And I'm thinking, my gosh, when you're all said, well, you know, I got time. I have another customer who's got a 356 Porsche, murdered in the front, murdered in the rear, rusty as can be. Well, you know, I got time. I can do this. 10 years of your life and X number of dollars, I don't know if you're going to live that long. The problem is that the enthusiasm wears off, and then you're going to go, ah. Like this car we went and looked at today, okay? Just as an example. So the guy buys this car 2 years ago, thinks he's a mechanic. I watch YouTube. I can do this. Buys all the welding equipment. Buys this. Buys that. And then next thing you know what he says? You know what? This is overwhelming. You know what he did? He went out and bought a done car. Not quite the same car, but something very close. Bought himself a little open sports car. He's driving around having a good time. Basically gave this car to his kid, said, get rid of it, sell it. And so that's it. So that's kind of my thingy for today. And we got hopefully some interesting guests for you lined up here in the next couple of weeks. In the meantime, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars. What's the name of that publication? We just met those people today.
That is Nature Coast Cruising Magazine.
Yeah, so for all you guys up in the Nature Coast, which is what? North Pasco County, Hernando Citrus. Yeah, there's this publication out now, and it's put on by a husband and wife team. And it's kind of a neat publication. I just picked it up by accident the other day when I was at a tire store. And we're going to maybe have them on a show and interview them. I might even get involved and write an article or two for them. But nonetheless, again, the name is, Bobby?
Nature Coast Cruising.
Okay. And don't forget, if you want to find out where all the car shows in the state of Florida, flacarshows.com. Big shout out to Tara out there in Orlando because she's got a Shelby. Proud of her. Anyway, in the meantime, I want to see some of you guys get out there and go to some of the car shows. Do this, do that. And don't forget to check us out here every Tuesday between 7 and 8 p.m. on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Car Show's coming up. Shelby Meet's coming up. Monterey's coming up in a couple weeks or months. Stay safe, drive carefully, and love your family.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
Listen.